Welcome back to Uprising. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. 40 years ago today, the day that Americans refer to as the fall of Saigon took place in Vietnam, marking the end of the U.S. war in Vietnam. Vietnamese refer to it as Reunification Day or Liberation Day. It was the day that the Viet Cong and other North Vietnamese forces took over the capital of South Vietnam, renaming it from Saigon to Ho Chi Minh City and kicking off a communist-led government. For American anti-war activists, April 30th, 1975 marked the end of a spirited struggle against the U.S. government. The anti-war movement here politicized thousands of young Americans in particular and became a central part of the pantheon of progressive movements birthed during the 1960s and 70s. Among the activists was my guest, Paul Krehbiel, longtime labor activist, anti-Vietnam War activist, author of Shades of Justice, a memoir. Welcome to Uprising, Paul.
Thank you, Sonali.
Thanks so much for joining us. Well, what was your life like before you were politicized by the anti-war movement in the 60s? Can you paint a picture for our audience, with the sense that you might have been a sort of typical American politicized by the war?
Well, I was a typical American. Grew up in a family where my dad went to work and my mom stayed home and took care of myself and two younger brothers. And we grew up at a time that, we were still in the Cold War. We were coming out of the McCarthy period. I grew up in the 1950s. I graduated from high school in 1966 and pretty much believed what the government told us. So when it came to increasing involvement in Vietnam, the arguments that they made to the American people were that we needed to go in there and help save the Vietnamese people. We had to go in and help them decide their own future, free from outside influence. And for, most Americans who were raised in a rich tradition of democracy and believing in it, that seemed to make sense.
And did the racial discrimination that you witnessed in your community and city around the time, and also the burgeoning civil rights movement, play a role in how you saw the Vietnam War?
Well, it did. I grew up in Buffalo, New York. It was at that time a very heavily industrialized city. And on the east side of the city was the black community. And when you went on the east side of Buffalo, you would see really glaring and stark differences in the condition of housing. We knew that unemployment was much higher among African Americans. So clearly, I knew that all of the grand-sounding things that the U.S. government said about our country, there was something not really quite right. We weren't really getting the whole picture.
So how did you first become involved in the anti-war movement? And I'm assuming you were actually a draft age at the time that you became politicized.
Yes. like I say, initially I believed what the government told us. But as I started seeing pictures on television of U.S. troops marching through villages in Vietnam, burning down people's homes, dead bodies of men, women, and children on the ground, seeing pictures of literally carpet bombing of whole villages in Vietnam, this was shocking to me. And it really jarred with the image that we were given of our government. Yeah. And so this was the beginning of starting to rethink, really what our government was telling us and what was going on in Vietnam.
And you decided to go to Canada rather than risk jail time for not wanting to go into the Army?
Yeah, there was some other, that combined with, I remember I had a friend in high school who was a star baseball player on the varsity team. And my last image of him was hitting a home run in one of the varsity baseball games. He got drafted. He was a year ahead of me in high school. He got drafted, sent to Vietnam, and a year and a half later, he was back home paralyzed in a wheelchair for life. Mm-hmm. So all of those things made me believe that we weren't being told the truth about Vietnam. And I moved to Canada in 1968 really to avoid the draft and refuse to fight in Vietnam. So I consider myself a war resister.
And then you had an industrial accident and came back to the U.S., was released from your obligation to the Army and became involved in the movement full-fledged?
Yes, exactly. When I came back, I started taking classes at the University of Buffalo, first night classes because I was working during the day. And, you know, there I was introduced to a very powerful anti-war movement led by Students for a Democratic Society. And combined with what I was learning at the campus and my own reading, I read in a very important book called Vietnam, Vietnam by Felix Green. That and my own personal experiences led me to become an anti-war activist. And first and foremost, I got involved in the Buffalo Draft Resistance Union.
So describe for our audience what the participation in the movement looked like, what it felt like. You must have marched and organized. I mean, this was before the days of the internet. The internet wasn't even a spark in someone's imagination. Yeah, maybe it was somewhere, but nobody really, you know, you didn't have the kind of instant communication we have today. And so organizing was just a different kind of thing.
Well, the way we organized then was, this was back in the day of the old mimeograph machine.
Yeah.
Probably a lot of people today aren't familiar with that, but we would crank out leaflets on a hand-cranked mimeograph machine and then go and pass them out everywhere.
And what did those, you know, what sorts of demands were being made? What the culture of the 60s and 70s organizing was a very distinct culture. Anti-war activism had its own sort of influence in the culture that's still, you know, apparent today. And I'm wondering if you can give our audience a sense of what it felt like for you to be part of that movement.
The sense that I got, and I think it maybe originated on a lot of the college campuses, but then it spread beyond that into the broader community. And that was one of, I think, real deep and serious questioning of what our government was saying and doing, and a rejection on the part, especially of a lot of the young people of my generation, of really rejecting that, rejecting this whole idea that might makes right, that in order to solve disputes, we have to go to war and kill people, that, you know, really the system of capitalism, which we increasingly saw as an exploitative system where one person's success would be another person's failure. Many of us began to question all of these things and created a whole subculture. With our own art and music, and it was a very exciting time, and I think it had an impact way beyond just our generation. It really had an influence throughout society.
Right. I mean, you know, many people associate Bob Dylan and John Lennon and all of these very well-known celebrity musicians who aligned themselves with the movement. And then sort of fast forward to April 30th, 1975, when the fall of Saigon happened, when the war officially ended. Many people today might attribute the end of the Vietnam War to the raucous spirited and organized anti-war activism that you were involved in. But others say that it was really the Vietnamese themselves who drove the U.S. out. What do you think?
Well, I think first and foremost it was the Vietnamese, and we need to, you know, recognize that and respect that history. They went through tremendous suffering. Over 3 million Vietnamese were killed, 5 million wounded. Many millions more affected by Agent Orange, which still the third generation children today are suffering from in Vietnam. I was on a trip in 2011 to Vietnam, and we visited a hospital where there was a whole ward set up to take care of third generation victims of Agent Orange. But on April 30th, 1975, for many of us in the anti-war movement, it was really the end of a chapter, and it was a relief that, you know, thank goodness the war is finally over. And a lot of people who were involved in the anti-war movement went on to do many other things during that period. Most all of my friends that were involved, none of them really changed their fundamental beliefs. They went on and did other things in life. But they were profoundly affected, as I was, by that period, and it really shaped us and made us who we are, and we have not given up those ideals.
And what is your life? I mean, I hate to ask you to put the last 40 years of your life in a nutshell on this interview, but how deeply has the last 40 years of your life been influenced by your years of being an anti-war activist?
Well, at the time that I was getting involved in the anti-war movement, I also worked, and in Buffalo, it was a very heavily industrialized city at the time, and I worked in the auto industry. It was an auto parts company that I worked in. And when I saw the way people were treated on the job, and I saw the union sticking up for them, I immediately gravitated to the union and got involved in the union and ultimately became active in the union most of my life, ultimately in 1985 becoming a full-time union representative. But I saw a parallel between what was happening in Vietnam, the discrimination and abuse of the Vietnamese people, and the discrimination and abuse of workers in too many jobs. They were similar. I mean, clearly what was happening in Vietnam was much more serious. But it was a similar dynamic, and the political forces and economic forces were the same.
Yeah.
My understanding, as I studied more about Vietnam, was the United States did not go in there to protect the rights of the South Vietnamese people. If they really believed that, they would have abided by the Geneva Accords of 1954, which ended 100 years of French colonial oppression in Vietnam. There were supposed to have been elections to reunite the country in 1956 in the U.S. Through supporting a hand-picked individual that they put in power in South Vietnam. They called off these elections. And Eisenhower later wrote in a book, Mandate for Change, "I've never corresponded with anybody knowledgeable in Indochinese affairs who does not agree that if those elections would have been held, probably 80% of the people would have voted for the communist Ho Chi Minh." So if our government is telling us that we are for democracy, how can they then claim that it's okay to go in and overthrow a government and repress elections, which would have allowed the Vietnamese people to make a democratic choice?
Yeah. And then finally, 40 years later, you've continued your anti-war activism, specifically on Vietnam, by also being involved in working for reparations for the Vietnamese. How serious an issue is this, and how do you make the case to Americans that Vietnam deserves reparations?
Yeah. Well, it's actually a very huge issue. When we were in Vietnam in March of 2011, we toured the entire country, but repeatedly our Vietnamese hosts, and it was the Vietnam Women's Union that hosted our trip, they would talk to us about the legacy of the war. And one of the most serious problems was this problem of Agent Orange. Not only are there still people suffering from its effects, getting cancer, heart disease, diabetes, many other diseases, children being born with very serious birth defects, and much of the land and water still poisoned by Agent Orange and dioxin specifically, which is the most toxic poison known to science to date. These are all important issues for the Vietnamese, and we had discussions about it, and they said the United States at the end of the war made a pledge to make some reparations to Vietnam. There's been a little bit of cleanup of some of the sites where Agent Orange was stored and used, but very little. I mean, it's the tip of the iceberg. Much more needs to be done. So there are various organizations. There's an Agent Orange Relief and Responsibility Campaign, which I'm involved with. We have a bill in Congress to help make reparations, not only for the Vietnamese that have suffered, but also American soldiers that have suffered from Agent Orange. And that's really, and this was started by Vietnam veterans. So that's our segue to the American people, is to talk about initially American soldiers that were exposed to this. Many of them also got cancer and died early. Some have had children that have been born with birth defects and other health ailments because of Agent Orange. And so our fight is to make sure that the fight to help U.S. service members that suffered in Vietnam, we have to make sure that that's combined with helping the Vietnamese. We can't leave them behind because they suffered much, much more than we did.
Well, Paul, I want to thank you so much for joining us today and sharing some of these thoughts on this anniversary.
Thank you, Sonali.
My guest, Paul Krehbiel, is a longtime labor activist, anti-Vietnam War activist, and author of Shades of Justice, a memoir. This is Uprising. We'll continue our coverage of this anniversary after this break.